Hi, and welcome to Light the Way, the teaching ministry of Pastor Colin Munger of Shepherd of the Hills Calvary Chapel. At Light the Way, our desire is to help you grow closer to God through the study, understanding, and application of His Word. So stay tuned, because at the end of the program, we'll have information on how you can reach us. For now, let's open our Bibles and prepare our hearts to hear from God's Word.
We could turn in our Bibles. We're in John chapter 5 this morning. Our series is called Get Off the X, and we've been looking at different spiritual traps. We're winding this series down, actually, because before you know it, it's going to be Easter. And so we only have a couple weeks left, and then we will be off the X. But for now, we are there, and we're in John chapter 5, and it's a message that I'm calling Get Off the X of Defeat, something that certainly all of us have struggled with before. Again, John chapter 5. I'm holding in my hand something that many of you will recognize. It is an ink cartridge from a home printer. And it's not particularly impressive. I mean, this is the kind that you can buy at any office supply store, Staples, Office Depot, Walmart, any place like that. And certainly, this is one that if you have a home printer, you know magenta goes out before like all of them for some reason. But that's what I have, is a magenta ink printer cartridge. And if I said that right. But that's what's in my hand. And the thing that makes this interesting is because it's empty. This one doesn't work anymore. And not for any other reason. It's not defective. It's not broken in that way, but it is empty. It's been used one too many times. So at one point, this was in someone's printer, and they pressed the print button one too many times. And it just saw one too many cycles of that until eventually it had nothing left at all, and it ran empty. I've noticed that people can sometimes get like that cartridge. They can feel empty inside, all used up, broken, defeated. And I'm willing to bet that there are some people here today who might feel a little like this ink cartridge. You've just been through one too many cycles of life, one too many trials, one too many challenges, one too many illnesses, one too many financial hardships. You're not defective. There's nothing wrong with you. You've just been through one too many. You've been told one too many times no to the job interview. Maybe you failed one too many times. You've heard one too many points of criticism. And now you're at the point, like this ink cartridge here, where you just have nothing left. You've given all that you had, and that was it. In the book of Proverbs, in chapter 18, it says, "The spirit of a man can sustain him in sickness, but who can stand a broken spirit?" And maybe that describes someone today. That person, we would say, is living on the X of defeat. And so this morning, as we continue in this series, that's what I want to talk about, getting off the X of defeat. And to do that, I want to look at a man in the Bible who was on that X for a long time. We're going to read four decades almost he was there. And I want to look at why he was there and what he did about it to get off the X and what we can learn from and apply from his story. And so we're in John chapter 5, and it begins in verse 1 where it says, After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first, after the stirring of the water, was made well of whatever disease he had. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. Now, before we get into the message, very quickly, I need to just address the elephant in the room, and that is the fact that not everyone has verse 4. If you're reading the ESV, the New Living Translation, if you've got the NLT, the NIV, the New Revised Standard Version, NRSV, then you either don't have that verse, or it's in brackets, and it might have a note attached to it that says it's not in the oldest manuscripts. And that's because there is an argument about verse 4 that exists among the Bible publishers and translators. because it seems that in the oldest manuscripts that have been discovered, verse 4 is not always there. And so what has been concluded by the historians is that verse 4 very well may have been like a notation of a scribe in the margin that explained why everyone was hanging around this stinky sheep gate. And yet it then migrated into the text at some point, and so now we have verse 4, but they'll contend that we didn't used to, and so it doesn't belong there. And so for that reason, some publishers have taken it out, or they've indicated that. On the other hand, you have people who say, well, just because it's not in all of the ancient manuscripts doesn't mean it wasn't in the original. And the truth is no one has the original. We have copies of the original, so it's kind of conjecture. But nonetheless, they'll say that even if it's not in all of them, it is in some of them. And it is in some of the ancient scrolls. It is mentioned in the first century, the second century, the third century. It's quoted by an ancient Bible translator by the name of William Tyndale. It's in the Geneva Bible, one of the oldest versions in the world. It's in the first century Aramaic Bible that was translated from the actual language of Jesus. And so the point there is we can't just ignore it. And the fact of the matter is it is in some versions, it's not in other versions, but it does give us a sense of why they're there. These people believed, for whatever reason, that if you got into this water before anyone else, that you would be healed. And the fact that they're there and that there's a multitude of them there, it suggests that something's going on, because after all, they wouldn't be there if nothing was happening at all. And so whether it was in the originals or not doesn't really affect us this morning, but just understand that is what it is, and that's why some versions have it differently. But nevertheless, we come to verse 5, and it tells us that we have a certain man. Now notice this man doesn't have a name. We don't know anything about him, but we do know that he's sick. We know that his sickness means that he can't walk. And so he has been there, it tells us, for 38 years. It's an interesting thing that it says 38 years, how specific that is. Because the Bible isn't always that specific with people. With the blind man, for example, it just told us he was blind from birth. But here it says 38 years. And that leads us to believe that he might not have been born like this, that something happened in this man's life, some illness came upon him that took away his ability to walk. And I say it's interesting because even though all of that is possible, it does lead us to believe that this illness does not represent all of his life. However, it doesn't say anything about his life before it. And so it doesn't tell us where this man was born or the name of his father. It doesn't say where he grew up or what tribe he's from or the profession he might have had. It doesn't tell us how old he is. It doesn't tell us whether he had friends. I mean, nothing at all. Was he popular? We don't know. Does he have kids? We don't know. Is he married? We don't know. How did he get there? We don't know. Was he injured? Is this an illness? We don't know. It doesn't tell us. All it says is he had an infirmity and he'd been there for 38 years. But before that, it's a total mystery. That's interesting because it brings up something for all of us. And I bring all of that up to mention this. When a person lives on the edge of defeat for too long, like this man has been 38 years, oftentimes that person can start to forget what life was like before they were sick, before they were unemployed, before they were depressed, before they struggled. They say things like, well, I just can't remember what it's like to be happy. I just can't remember the last time that I felt good, or the last time that I had a good day, or I felt confident about anything, or I felt secure in my job, or I wasn't hurt and I wasn't depressed. And so people will say, I just can't remember the last time. I can't remember before the affliction. It's been like this for so long, I don't remember my life before. Like this man. The only thing we know about him is that he's been paralyzed for a long time and he's been by this pool for 38 years. The fact is, he doesn't even have a name in the text. And that's also interesting because he could be any one of us. I was reading the other day that 48 million Americans currently struggle with chronic depression. upwards of 85% of workers are unhappy in their job, and something like half of all marriages are considered unhappy. And yet you would never know that often just by looking at someone. And that's an important thing to remember, because it reminds us that there's no way to look at a person and know what they're going through by their face. We don't know what's in their mind. We don't know their story. We don't know what's brought them to where they are. We don't know why this guy is there, just that he is. And it's wrong to start making assumptions about people because of how they look. The Bible tells us that man judges based on the outward appearance, but that God looks at the heart of an individual. And so for whatever reason, God allowed this man to be paralyzed for the last 38 years of life. And during that time, this man has been living on the edge of defeat. And we see that he's defeated in a number of ways. He's defeated physically. Notice that in verse 5. He was there who had an infirmity. In some versions, it says he was paralyzed, but he was there for 38 years. I was talking to a doctor one time about this very passage, and he was saying that a person who's been paralyzed for that long starts to become deformed. And it's because after long enough of not moving, the muscles will start to atrophy. And when that happens, they can start to contract. And they lose all ability to straighten or bear any kind of weight. And so that every single day, the person is actually able to do a little less than the day before. And it's just a constant downward slope. And eventually what happens is the hands and the feet and the fingers and the toes, they start curling inward so that the person can't even extend their limbs. And so that's this man. And he doesn't have a name, but he's sitting there and he's like that. And he's getting worse every single day. And he's watching all of these other people just walk around and they're running down to the water. And he wishes just one time that that could be him. Just one time that he would make it first. That maybe, just maybe if he could, then finally he'd be healed. And he'd get to do all the things that he sees everyone else doing. He'd get to walk through a field and enjoy the sunshine and smell the flowers. Maybe he'd meet someone and they'd hold hands as they walk through town. Maybe he could go to church, could lift his arms in praise. Maybe he would walk through the town square and participate in society again. He'd be part of the community again. But the fact is, right now, none of that is true. And none of that is even on the horizon for him. He has a debilitating illness, and he can't even get himself to the water, let alone move himself through town. And no doubt, throughout his life, he saw all the doctors, and he went to the specialists, and he kept the appointments, and one by one, they all told him no. And they said, oh, but don't worry, I have a friend who specializes in this kind of a thing. And so there was a little hope. And so they go to that appointment. And then that person says, no, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. There's no cure for this condition. We don't have any options for you at all. And he tried the therapy and he went to physical therapy and he tried all the faith healers. He went to the Pharisees. He's been praying day and night, no doubt, every day praying to be healed. Lord, just once, please let it be me. And yet day by day, month by month, year by year, nothing changes. And so we have a man, no name, but he's defeated physically. He's also defeated emotionally. And understand that one of the most discouraging things any person can go through is a chronic illness like this. That's why Paul says in 2 Corinthians, we don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble. He says, we were burdened beyond our measure, above strength, he says, so that we despaired of life itself. And that's because a person who is suffering something like that, something like this man here, has an illness that never relents. It doesn't take a day off. It doesn't give you a break. You can't catch your breath. Every single day you're dealing with it. And you go to bed and you can't sleep well. And so you're tired and you're cranky and you're miserable and it hurts. And day after day after day is like that. And then everyone's telling you that's all you're ever going to have for the rest of your life. It will never stop. And we hear that in this man's voice because in verse 6 it says, when Jesus saw him lying there, and knew that he'd already been there in that condition a long time, he said to him, do you want to be made well? The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps down before me." And so Jesus approaches this man. And it says he knew, and in the original language, it's more than just like comprehending. He had a total comprehension and understanding of everything this man had ever been through just by laying eyes on him. And he looks at the man in that condition, and he says, "Do you want to be made well?" And the man replies with some of the saddest words in all of the Bible. He says, "But sir, I have no one. Not a friend, not a wife, not a parent, not a child, not a pastor, not a sports coach, no teacher, no neighbor, no relative, not even a stranger." And certainly this man had a family. I mean, he must have had a mother. He was born somehow. He had a father. Definitely, probably had siblings. I mean, it was unusual to have an only child back then. But one by one, over the years, they've all abandoned him. Until one day they drop him off at the pool and they say, "Okay, we'll see you next week," until they don't. And they don't come back. And so now he's there by himself. And so when he hears Jesus, and Jesus says, "Do you want to be made well?" The only thing he can get out is, "But sir, I have no one." Even though there's a multitude of people, and understand, at this particular pool, historically, there would have been 300 to 500 people surrounding it during normal times. During a feast or a festival like this, there would have been 3,000 to 5,000 people around this pool, and yet this man says, "Sir, I have no one." He's totally and utterly alone. Look, it is possible to be in a crowd of people and feel totally and utterly alone. I remember being in my early 20s, living in Albuquerque, more than 1 million people in that city, and yet feeling totally and utterly alone. I mean, you look around, there's lots of people, lots of traffic, lots of cars, the stores are all full, multitudes of people, and yet they're all strangers. They're all going about their lives. They have their own things on their mind, and they have their own schedules, too busy to notice anybody else. And unfortunately for this man, that is also true. And unfortunately, it is often the case with chronically ill people that they find themselves all alone. They can't do what they used to do, and so they have to turn down all the invitations, and eventually people stop asking, and so they don't get invited, and it's not that they don't want to go, it's just that they can't. I was reading somewhere that 75% of marriages where one person has a chronic debilitating illness will end in divorce. And it's because, usually speaking, the caregiver looks at all of it. And they decide, "Look, that's not what I signed up for. I don't want to spend the rest of my life changing bedding and pushing a wheelchair, and I want to go and do things." And they decide that that's more important, and so the person leaves. And so we have this man. And one by one, and we don't know if it was a wife, it was at some point definitely parents, but somebody, his whole circle has abandoned him. He's got no one. He has no name. I mean, this could be anybody, but he's defeated spiritually. Physically, he's also defeated emotionally. And third, we see he's defeated spiritually. He says in verse 7, "I have no one to put me into the pool. And while I'm coming, another one steps down before me." This man has been by the same pool of water for 38 years. And no doubt in all of that time, he's seen other people healed. Remember, they wouldn't be there if nothing was happening. He's crippled. He's not dumb. If nothing ever came out of that, there's no reason to think he'd be hanging around that place. It certainly wasn't sanitary. It smelled horrible. And so he's there. 38 years later, something's going on. He's seen dozens of people healed over the years because he still believes if he gets in there, he will be too. But dozens of people are healed, and yet never him. And no doubt the whole time he's praying. Every year he prays, "Lord, just let it be me." Every day he prays, "Lord, next time let it be me." And he's asking God, "Just once, Lord, let it be me. Let it be me this time, Lord. I've been here long enough. I've prayed long enough. I've suffered long enough. I've celebrated when other people have been healed. Can't one time, just once, we celebrate that I've been healed? Just bring somebody, Lord. Help me into this pool. Do your miracle on me, Father," he prays. And who among us at one point or another, has prayed for something that didn't happen, and we thought, well, prayer doesn't work. Or at the very least, we start thinking, my prayer doesn't work. God must not be listening to my prayers. If he was, if he did hear me, then he would have helped. I've been praying faithfully for years. I didn't do anything to deserve this. And yet there's nothing. He hasn't brought me the job. He hasn't given me the wedding. I don't have the kids. I haven't been healed. The provision isn't there. I'm still hurting. I'm still struggling. I'm still suffering. You'd think just once in 38 years, God would answer my prayer, but no, he leaves me here to rot. And so many people struggle with the same thing. If God cares, then why? If God cares, then why doesn't he help that child? Why didn't he take away their cancer? If God cares, then why did he let my parents die? Why did he let my husband die, my wife die? Why did he let my family die? If the Lord hears my prayer and he promises to provide, then why did he take our home? Why did God heal that person and not me? They don't even love him. They waste their life. They're in their position because of their behavior. I'm here through no fault of my own. Why them and not me? And understand, on that day at this pool, Jesus only healed this guy. And I'm certain there were must have been other people. There were thousands there. Saw it happen. Everyone saw it happen. Jesus walked in, made a beeline for him, healed him. And then what did he do? He left. And everyone else is looking on that and they're saying, well, why him? What about everyone else? I mean, Lord, there's a multitude of people here. You're going to heal one guy and tease us and then leave? And so people look at that and they look at the problems of the world and they say, well, if God truly existed, then why? Why does he let millions of babies die in the womb? Why does he let kids all over the world go hungry and get trafficked? Why doesn't he give everyone heat in the winter? Why is there war and disease and natural disasters? Why does a tornado take out one home and not another? If God cares at all, then why does he let people suffer the way they do? Isn't he loving? Isn't he powerful? Couldn't he stop it if he wanted to? And those people very often will conclude that it's either because God doesn't care or he's not there. But either way, they tend to walk away feeling defeated spiritually. And so it goes with this man at this pool. If God really cared, if prayer really worked, if I mattered at all, then certainly by now my prayer would have been answered. But as it is, it hasn't been. It's been 38 years. And so far, nothing has helped. The Pharisees can't help. The doctors haven't helped. The faith healers haven't helped. Nobody's well wishes have helped. None of the drugs or medicines have helped. The sacrifices haven't helped. As he says in verse 7, at the end of all of it, all he has to say is, sir, I have no one. And so we have a man living on the edge of defeat. But we know he's not going to stay there because the series title is Getting Off the X. So there's got to be a positive ending here. And I want to look at that for sure. But I want to look at why and how he's able to get off of this X. Notice next in verse 8, Jesus said to him, verse 8, he says, rise, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who is cured, it is the Sabbath. It's not lawful for you to carry your bed. He answered them, he who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk. Then they asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. And so this man gets off the X. This man escapes the feeling of defeat. But how? What happened? What did he do in his life How did he get off of this axe? Well, first of all, we'll notice something, and that is he remained. He remained willing to receive. Notice in verse 6, Jesus asked him, "Do you want to be made well?" And that's an important question to ask, because the truth is, not everyone wants to be made well. For some people, they're so used to the suffering that they just can't imagine life being any different. They're just happy in their misery, you know? It's like the baby with the dirty diaper. It smells and it stinks, but it's mine, and don't take it away. And it just scares them when you start talking about being made well. And so they say things like, "Yeah, that sounds great, and I'll do that next year. I'll work on that next time. I'll do better later on, after so-and-so moves out, or after the kids are older, or when things slow down at the office, when the weather changes, I don't feel so bad, when money's not as tight, then we can talk about these other things." But the reality is, for too many people, they just don't want to be made well. And it's not that they don't like the idea of improving, it's just that they don't want to be truly healed. They don't want to go to the one who can do all things. Now, they might want to feel better. They want the problem to go away, but they don't want to be healed. They want the pill. They want the quick fix. They want the easy solution. We live in a world today where you just go to your doctor, you get an injection for it. You get a prescription for it. That's what they want. There's a lot of people who come to counseling, and that's what they want. Just tell me the magic words. Say something to me that's going to make all of this make sense and all of it go away, and I'll feel better about life. A lot of people come to counseling looking for coddling, not counseling. They want to be told that they're right. They don't want to be made well. They want the problem fixed, but they don't want to be healed. Because here's the thing. If they were truly healed, if they were made well, the question is not, do you want to walk? The question is, do you want to be made well? And if you're made well, then you know what disappears are all the excuses that we've created over the years of life. If I'm healed, then that means I'm going to have to deal with the root of the issue. If I'm truly made well again, I'm not going to have anything to blame. I'm not going to have any excuses why I don't have to try. I'm not going to be able to say it's because I was brought up this way, or I had a broken family, or I lived in a rough part of town, or people are unfair. If I'm truly made well, it means I'm not going to be able to blame the prices of everything for why I run out of money, or I'm not going to be able to blame the internet for why it is I keep going to those websites. The question is, do you want to be made well? Jesus said, "Wherever your treasure is, your heart will be also." And look, some people want to be made well. Their heart is there, and they're praying for it, and that's wonderful, but others just don't. They know this life. They know this challenge. They know this problem. They know this rhythm of living, and they just don't want anything to disrupt everything about life. They just want the problem to disappear. They don't want to change the diet. They just want to lose the weight. They don't want to go through what the doctor's going to tell them. They just want the surgery. They don't want to change their interaction with their spouse. They just want the other person to treat them better. They want a higher paying job, but they don't want to do the work to go and earn one. And so there's a lot of people that just want the fix, but they don't want to be made well. And so Jesus asks him the question, "Do you want that?" And it is an important question. Because ultimately, if the person does not want to be made well, then all the counsel and all the effort and all the treatment in the world won't help. If Jesus had walked up to this man and said, "Do you want to be made well?" and just fixed his legs, but the man had said, "No, I don't want to be healed," the man still wouldn't walk. He might have been able to, but there'd be a million reasons why not. "Well, I can walk, you know, but I'm sure so much has changed. I don't know why I'd bother. I don't have anywhere to go. You know, I know this corner. I might as well just stay here." There'd be so many things that he could come up with. And so Jesus doesn't ask, does he want to walk? He says, "Do you want to be healed?" Everyone wants the problem to go away. But how many want to truly be healed? If you're on the X of defeat this morning, this is a great question to ask. Do you want to be made well? Everyone wants the pain to stop. But do you want to be healed? Jesus said in Luke 4, "He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted." And so do you want to be healed? Do you want to be challenged? Do you want to be regenerated and changed from the inside out? Do you want that? Because that is what Jesus can offer. And so we see this man who remains willing. And we know that because the conversation continues, which means Jesus saw in the man's heart that, yes, this is what he wanted. Second, he responds, and he responds optimistically. Notice in verse 9 what he says. It says, immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. And by the way, it's interesting because if you ever hear anybody says they have the gift of healing, ask yourself, okay, but did the person get up immediately? Because that's always the litmus test in the Bible. Not, I prayed for them and they went home and 2 weeks later they felt better. It's always immediately. The blind man saw immediately. The lame man walked immediately. The dead rose immediately. And so here it says that immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and he walked. And it's interesting because as all of this is happening, this man doesn't even know who he's talking to. In verse 13, the man who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn since there was a multitude of people there. And so he doesn't know this is Jesus. He's not even sure it will work. Nothing ever has. No experimental treatment has ever done anything. The Pharisees couldn't do anything. The faith healers couldn't do anything. All he knows is that for once someone said, I can help you. And he's been waiting to hear those words for 38 years. For someone to come along and say, there's hope. Don't give up. For someone to come along and say, I see you. And I'm not stepping over you today. And you're not just an inconvenient obstacle in my path. I'm here to help. Do you want to be made well? And so the moment finally happens.
You've been listening to Light the Way with Pastor Colin Monger of Shepherd of the Hills Calvary Chapel. We'd love to hear how this message blessed you. Just visit our website at www.lightthewayradio.org. That's www.lightthewayradio.org, where you can access more messages by Pastor Colin, contact our office, share prayer requests, and even give financially to support the ministry. Again, the website is www.lightthewayradio.org. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in again next week as we let God's Word light the way.